We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
So I'm sorry to report to my friends in Chicago, the nightmare continues.
Chicago Tribune sports page?
Really?
Column by Stephen Rosenblum.
Steve Rosenblum. You know him? Never heard the name before yet.
Steve Rosenblum.
I think Chance the Rabbi is the way to go.
Brian Peruk.
Well, when's he coming back?
I said, do you want to come back? And it was an emphatic no.
There you go. Well, we're glad he misses us.
Where's Grody?
Sitting in for Mark Grody, who's sitting in for Brian Peruk, it's Mike Esposito.
I almost put that in my update just so I could say Esposito in the update again, but I didn't.
They suck, so you don't have to.
I can promise you this. When this show is over, we will tweet out an apology to our listeners.
For some reason they sing.
Take the last train to Turdsville and we'll meet you at the station. Take the last train to Turdsville. They're in need of sanitation, don't you know?
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
They won't stop singing.
Lido.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
It's a master's course in stupid.
You're tapping two kegs of stupid and it is really flowing.
Yeah, I got into journalism because I was told math was not part of it.
They have celebrity rebukes.
This is Wayne Mesmer, Senior Executive Vice President of the Wolves. You know, in all my years involved in sports and many teams, I have never been involved with something that sucks so badly.
The three words that best describe this show are as follows, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Rosenblum and Esposito on WSCR 670 The Score.
We should be 670 WSUK. Good morning. Welcome in. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. It's Saturday suckage, but the weather sucks, so at least we have that. But the energy here at the Sheraton Grand for the Cubs convention, where me and Mike Esposito will be broadcasting live for the next 3 hours, a full bowl. This is unbelievable.
It's fantastic. It's one of my favorite weekends every year, and it's darn good to be back sucking along on Saturdays with you, buddy.
I guess we should explain. Mike Esposito is sitting in for Matt Spiegel,
yes,
who is sitting in for Mike Esposito.
Correct.
Who is sitting in for
Grody.
Schuster.
Schuster.
Who is sitting in for Jordan Bernfield.
Jordan.
Who is sitting in for Grody.
Yes.
Who is sitting in for Randazzo. Who is sitting in for Brian Peruk.
That's right.
You still cross paths with Brian Peruk? And does he still wish he'd never left?
Yes, I see Brian all the time. Our children are in school together. And I just saw, actually, this week, Wayne Randazzo is the new radio play-by-play man for the Mets.
Good for him. So at this point, Saturday Suckage has sent Saturday Suckage alums.
Yes.
Have a World Series ring.
Correct.
And a full-time job broadcasting for the Mets, who, by the way, were in the news with the Cubs this week.
Yes, they were.
That was a thing, huh?
That was a thing. And they
blown up all over the place, too.
Chili Davis is their new hitting coach, the Mets thing. So, yeah, you have Wayne doing that. The aforementioned Brian Peruk doing very well for himself as well. They're on the FM dial. Grody is the sideline reporter for the Bears and has a World Series ring. So,
right.
And Jordan is Mr. Play-by-Play Man all over my college games everywhere. So what's wrong with me, I guess, is the question. What's going on here?
You're back here working the convention, the Cubs convention. All of this coverage is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. When you're at the Cubs convention, stop by Lizzie McNeil's Irish Pub. It's next door to the Sheraton. Get your Tito's specials all weekend long. We have quite a show.
That we do.
This is going to blow up the idea of Saturday suckage. But at 11:30, Len Casper will be here. Len Casper, the Cubs radio TV play-by-play broadcaster, will be here. He'll be joining us. At noon, Jason Hayward. I told my daughter, who listens out in L.A. on radio.com, mm-hmm. and who has the Cubs MLB app to watch the games as well. And I said, we're supposed to have Jason Hayward at noon. And she said, oh, God, tell him I love him. You know what? That's the first thing I'm going to do, Allie.
I own a Jason Hayward Blue Road Cubs jersey. And I know I can't wear it as we are here respected non-fan media members. But, you know, when I go sit
we're,
in the seats.
We're what?
I am the proud owner of a Jason Hayward Blue Cubs Road jersey.
Right.
I have my...
But you said something about respected media members. That's like an oxymoron.
I have my extremely old Sean Dunstan Cubs jersey. I rotate that one in every once in a while. I have an Andre Dawson. I have a bunch of them, right? I'm a longtime guy.
Uh-huh.
But I've kind of figured it would probably not be a good idea to wear my Jason Hayward jersey with Jason Hayward coming on as a guest. Just a thought.
You know what we really need? We need to put Grody in your Jason Hayward jersey.
Yes.
And have him sit here, interview Jason Hayward like Chris Farley. Remember
sure.
that time you hit the Grand Slam against
right.
the Phillies?
It was a walk-off.
That was great.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that's what we needed. At 12:30, Ryan Sandberg will be here.
He's pretty good, too.
I've heard.
Yes.
And you know what? Bob Costas retired. He left NBC this week. Not retired. He left NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Does that... Bob Costas is always going to be with Ryan Sandberg for me.
Yo, from the Bruce Sutter game, absolutely.
No, or it's the Ryan Sandberg. I'm going to tell on you.
It is the Ryan Sandberg game.
And I remember recently, before I left the Tribune, we had come across. It was the Bulls were starting the 20th anniversary season, right? Since the last championship.
Got it.
And what a disaster that's become. John Paxson should thank, and Gar Foreman should thank God, that every Reinsdorf in the world is inept and inert.
Oh, boy.
But this was 20 years mm-hmm. since Jordan hit the shot. And it was Costas who did that. And I said, I proposed it to Costas' office. I've talked to him before. And I said, can you run down your top 5 or 10 broadcasting moments, what you did, you doing play-by-play, not at the Olympics where you're recapping. I said, you're on the mic. If you remember the call, if you remember. He said, yeah, give me a couple days. So I did. He called me early. I found out he's not a morning person. Jordan's call was number one on his list.
On his personal top five.
For the way it resounded. I mean, because it was sure. such a professional moment and such a historic moment.
Yep.
Sandberg was second. He said 20 years later, more than 20 years later, I'm walking down the street, a guy will yell out of a cab, hey, Bob, the Sandberg game.
Yeah. I've had the good fortune to fill in when Zach Zaidman needs a breather or has a holiday or whatever.
Oh, yes.
I have filled in the Cubs booth with Pat and Ron, and it is one of my favorite things to do, and I'm grateful that I've been able to do it a few times. But the last time I was there, this past September, MLB Network was down the hallway from us, and Bob Costas was there, and he came over to talk and say hi to Pat and Ron. And
I'm Bob Costas.
And I'm just a fly on the wall listening to this conversation, but he mentioned the same thing. We got on the topic of people of Chicago. He's like, I can't walk outside this ballpark.
Right.
And I automatically get, hey, Sandberg game. It's like they don't even say his name. It's just Sandberg game. It's like, there he is. He's right there for you.
Right. So with him leaving, we'll talk. And remember, we had Ryan on the show on the anniversary of that game. It fell on a Saturday,
yep.
and the game was played on a Saturday. It was the game of the week.
Yes, it was.
That was another thing Costas mentioned about the importance of the Sandberg game. Because you go back to 1984,
Ryan Sandberg, MVP, right? 1984, right?
Correct. His breakout season.
Right. And those two home runs off the best relief pitcher in the game at the time, that was the only way you could see a game out of market.
Correct.
And that was national. That's what everybody across the country was watching. So it resounded in a way that nobody, the millennials, can't understand. I mean, if you were to say something like to my kids and you say, okay, VHS, they would go, why are you saying letters of the alphabet? They would have no idea.
Did you see the gag? I saw this on social media this week. Somebody had teenagers trying to dial a rotary phone. Did you see that one?
No, I did not.
Oh, it was precious.
Yes.
They had no idea. Figure out how to dial a rotary phone.
Yeah. It's kind of like a joy buzzer at the end. Joy buzzer, that's another thing. Try saying that to a kid. So that was... So when we get... I remember we talked to him, and he was... The details were so... Everything was still so crisp when we did it last summer. So 34 years. I can't do the math. 94, 04, 14. Okay, 34 years. And it was that day. And he came on. He talked about it. And it was just exactly what you would have gotten like right after a game.
And in my childhood baseball brain, I was 11, almost 12 in the summer of 84. And I remember the season vividly, but I remember that day vividly. I remember sitting in front of my house with the radio on, listening to that game, and then coming in to watch and seeing the home runs and the extras. I remember it vividly. It's one of my... You know, you don't remember specific games necessarily, especially regular season games. I remember that day very vividly.
So do you have a Sandberg shirt or jersey? You can sit here and goober all over him when he comes?
I do not. But so because I've gotten to do Cubs pre and post, Rhino is the post-game guest a lot of times. So he'll sit in the booth with me. So now it's like, oh, hey, Mike. And it's like, hey, Rhino, you know, old pal.
Oh, you guys are buds.
Oh, that's right. Well, when he comes up here, you know, the four or five times I've done it, I'm sure he considers me a close personal friend now. So, you know.
Yeah, sure he does. Okay. And so Rhino will be here at 12:30, and at 1 o'clock, Pat Hughes just voted the best broadcaster in Illinois for like the 7,000th time.
Can't we just rename that the Pat Hughes Award?
Yeah, he will be headed to the Hall of Fame. I don't see how you deny him the Ford Frick, for the years he's worked in Milwaukee, the years he's worked in Chicago, the professionalism, and I keep thinking of, I grew up with Vin Scully.
Best of the best.
Yes. And one of the things that jumped out at me when I started listening to Pat, and still resonates with me, is that Vin Scully said when he first started, it was 2021 in New York, and Red Barber ran the booth in Brooklyn. He said if Vin Scully came upstairs and didn't have a piece of information about why a guy wasn't in the lineup or what, something, Red Barber would send him back down. You better get that. I don't care how you do, you better get that. And
get to work, kid.
He fancied himself a reporter. And that's exactly what Pat Hughes does.
Yep.
Pat Hughes is a magnificent wordsmith. In a different way than Mike Emmerich, who is one of the best going. He's certainly a Hall of Famer. And Pat Hughes is a reader. He's a wonderful wordsmith. He is a terrific reporter. Attention to the details are everything.
And you mentioned wordsmith. He signs on and off. This is Pat Hughes reporting.
Yes.
That's what he does.
That's what he does. So that's our lineup for today. Shane Reardon is here muscling up on people on site. Zach Withers and later Adam Studzinski will be producing. Brian Gertz is here. And lucky for you people, in a true Saturday Suckage tradition, actually respecting Saturday Suckage, they're not televising anything unless it involves a guest.
Smartly.
And who's our engineer? I forgot his name. I'm old. It's not Dave Miska.
Ray Elizondo.
Ray, sorry. And all of the many Elizondos out there. And there's Spilkus running around, and he's giving the guys the finger, and he's going like that. So
we will have those guests. And the first point I want to get to, I'm not sure when we have to break, but the first point I want to get to is ask you, Mr. Cubs season ticket holder.
Yeah.
The lack of activity in the offseason represents to you fill in the blank.
Okay, I can handle that.
Now, fill in the blank.
I'm not good with it is the wrong word. I understand it. I know the why of it.
What do you believe to be the why?
I remember last year, it was a Saturday right before spring training, and you and I had just finished our show speculating about what the Cubs might do, and then all of a sudden they signed Yu Darvish. And it was like, oh, Yu Darvish.
It was the auto show. I was getting the car in the parking lot. You go, hey, Cubs just signed Yu Darvish. Oh, my day's not over.
That's right. We had just signed off the air. Well, so I understand it. I knew without being told, just knowing the finances and that tax level, what the Cubs were likely to be doing this offseason was what they're doing is a whole lot of nothing. Although Theo says maybe some bullpen moves coming up. I'm sure if he could trade some salary that is less attractive than some of the free agent guys out there. But, you know, the Bryce Harper pipe dream I don't think was ever going to happen. And explain to me this. I guess it's position related, but we've heard a ton on the Cubs side about Bryce Harper, but almost nothing about Machado. And I assume that's because Machado is an infielder and the Cubs don't need infielders, but
you always need talent. They always
correct.
They collect shortstops and then figure out where to play them.
Why not?
So and again, there's a mystery team. If you listen to Machado's dad was quoted.
There's always a mystery team. We've learned that over the years.
Here's something I saw this week. There have been various reports of a mystery team. Manny Machado's father said, I believe that the team you will probably less think about is the one that's going to sign Manny Machado, which might be the White Sox.
That's what I was going to say. That could be the White Sox.
Here, Yanks.
The rest of their family is already on the White Sox, so why not?
John Heyman, FanRag Sports, tweeted out that he's heard indeed there's a mystery team in the Derby. Also recently heard the team had the high bid. It may not be high enough. So Emma Boccolari at Sports Illustrated, she listed her mystery team. Catching is Sherlock Holmes. At first base is Nancy Drew. Second base, Hercule Poirot. Third base, Encyclopedia Brown. Shortstop, Jake Gyllenhaal and Zodiac.
I like that movie.
Left field, Hardy Boy 1. Center field, Hardy Boy 2. And in right field, Columbo. So that's her mystery team, which I just love that.
That's a lot of ground to cover for Columbo.
So obvious.
I don't think Columbo could cover all that ground out in right field.
You know, but he can always stop and come back and
right.
get it.
That's right.
Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, broadcasting live from the Cubs Convention. Cubs Convention coverage is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. Bottom of the hour, we will be talking with Len Casper, Cubs TV broadcaster. He will stop by. We are in the lobby. We're watching this long line snake. Is this the Hall of Fame lane?
I believe Andre Dawson is signing directly in that room in front of us, and I believe that is what the line is snaking for. It's the
but
Hall
I
of Fame.
I see all
line.
The names. I see.
Yeah.
Fergie's there, and Hawk is there.
When we walked in, it was Hawk. I don't know if it still is, but I believe it is.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll make sure we have time for Len Casper, Rosenblum, and Esposito. Saturday suckage, but it's going to be hard with the energy and excitement of Cubs Convention here at the Sheraton Grand. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hey, look who's here.
See how that's timing.
Look who's
it's an
here.
Entrance.
That's a broadcaster. That's a professional. Ladies and gentlemen, Len Casper joining us here on our stage as we try to rope in the people in line to get the Hall of Famers. Don't I feel small. Welcome.
Great to be here, Steve. How are you?
Good to see you, Len.
We're doing good. Thank you for joining us.
I listen a lot, and I don't know if I've ever been on your show. Have I?
No, not Saturday Suckage. You've had more sense than that.
Okay.
No, he has.
To be in a building, and they roped you in, and the energy.
Yeah, I wasn't asked about this one. This was on my list. No, I would have done it. I would have done it, of course.
I recall us having an on-the-air discussion about Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World at some point. Your walk-up music, I believe, we asked you.
It's great.
And that was your selected walk-up music.
Yeah, just it's my era and just puts me in that happy place, you know. I think life is lived as like a 12 to 13-year-old. Everything that was good then kind of remains better than everything the rest of your life. That's why I'm a big uniform guy, and that's kind of a big Twitter thing I go off on is uniforms. And like when NHL teams wear vintage unis from like 1984, I'm like, that should be the uniform they wear forever.
The uniforms NHL teams should wear should all have the ties.
Yeah,
that
those are nice.
That was the coolest thing ever. So the 80s was your sweet spot for
just
uniforms.
About everything.
So, because a lot of people my age will say they never wanted to wear the Astros Starburst, but they always remembered it. Much like in the 80s, they remember the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, the big V uniforms, yeah.
So what was your uniform of the 80s?
I have so many. I mean, I would just say I'm going to answer that in a general way. I like the three stripes NFL uniforms. The Bears have it with the blue and the orange on the pants. The Lions used to have it. They don't have it anymore. The Saints have that stripe on their helmet, but they don't have it on the pants, and it bothers me. The Cowboys,
you like
the 49ers.
In your uniforms?
Yeah, there's just there's something cool about that look with like the thick red stripes with the white stripe in the middle on the gold pants of the 49ers. I just think that really pops out.
So we were
But we're here to talk baseball, right?
No, we're here. We're here to talk whatever.
We're spraying all fields today.
Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
The Cubs convention began with again Theo. There was sort of an air of accountability, an air of understanding of we didn't do anything. And I went back to Mike was just talking about that. We did a show last year after the auto show. We get out of the car. We're done with the show, and the Cubs signed Yu Darvish. And I went and wrote on that, and I remember writing, this is the team that just won the World Series. Oops, babe. All right, that didn't age well. But with what happened last year, 95 wins despite all, and you go back and everything's going to be healthy. And even if they're not, Theo rallies better than anybody during a season that I've seen. So last year's team needs to win this year's World Series, the way I look at it. So I'm better. I'm not angry in a rare spasm of calm. Do you look at it that way, or how are you viewing what's gone on?
I just think 2018 was incredibly fascinating. It was very frustrating. There's so much nuance here. When Theo, in the panel I just did with him, talked about it, it was all of it. There were so many good things, the 95 wins, blah, 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 but you're left with this emptiness of the last 3 days. And the last two in particular, where the Brewers celebrate on your field, and then the next night the Rockies do. And where do you go from there? And in a vacuum, if that had been 2015, totally different, right? Wow, they overachieved, young club, they got to the wild card game. This is the start of something. But coming 2 years after a World Series title and after three consecutive NLCS trips, to have it end with a thud. And the Cubs went, I think, 16-12 in September. It was really more about how well the Brewers played. But as Theo said, when you felt like the season came down to 90 feet, there was like one swing of the bat. If you could have won one game before the Monday or won the game Tuesday night with a big hit in the wild card game, now you're guaranteed to play for at least another week. He said that's winning is a deodorant. You can cover up all the things. So when you win the World Series, you don't nitpick all the things that didn't go right. He goes, when your season comes down to 90 feet, that's the perfect time to nitpick because one little thing could have changed everything. So sometimes that's the way the ball bounces. I think Theo has chosen to view it this way. Let's do everything in our power to work on the margins and make sure that next year we get that extra 90 feet. We find a way to get into the next round, however we do it.
It was very Bears-esque. I mean, the Bears' finish was much the same. I think fans expected
this
to continue, right? I mean, this was a team. You followed every step of the way. They exceeded expectations. Probably should have won the game. You had the kick thing and everything else. But with the Cubs, you had the Bryant injury, and he was never really himself. The Darvish stuff with the injury. Chatwood, I mean, all of the various moves that you thought would improve you, and I know we were both, as Steve just said, the day they signed Darvish, we were on the air. That was like, holy cow, that's right. You know, this is a great signing. And I did see his comments from yesterday where he said he's feeling night and day from last year. He's going to start throwing again. He should be full go by beginning of the season for spring training. In your baseball mind, keeping all of the injury stuff out of it, do you think that this is going to be, is he going to be able to start and just be a part of this rotation without limitations?
I have no idea. My hunch would be no, not early. I think it is going to be a process, and I think the difference between last year and this year in regards to you, Darvish, is last year you're counting on 30 starts, top three guy in your rotation, dominate people at every turn. This year, I think you go in very cautiously, and you make sure you're covered if it doesn't go well, and you hope that he gets back and is healthy. That's the first thing, right, is you got to make sure the guy is completely healthy. Then you can start to count on production. But I don't think the Cubs look at it that he'll be in the opening day rotation and going to take the ball and throw 110 pitches on March 31st. If there is a March 31st. Is there a March 31st?
I don't know, but maybe there is. March, if he's going to throw 110 pitches, I
it would
will
be March,
create a day.
March 32nd, yes.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
To answer your question, hopefully, but I think you with Morrow and Darvish, I think you just, whenever they're back, they're back.
We're talking with Len Casper, Cubs broadcaster, and we are at the Cubs convention at the Sheraton Grand. Convention coverage sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I root for...
Oh, I have been on before, I've been told.
You have?
Yes, I'm looking at the computer. Len has been on before.
I do remember, we did have a conversation because you remember we were letting everyone do their walk-up music, and I do remember our Tears for Fears conversation. That was it. That's what sticks out to me, yes.
Must have been memorable.
Well, at least nobody held it against you.
Right, exactly. So you invited me back.
I root for stories. I always did root for stories, but it was an occupational hazard. And I really thought, and I want to get, how do you balance rooting for a story when you see Jason Hayward hit that grand slam against Philly. David Bote, the grand slam. I mean, that's down three, the ultimate kind of grand slam.
Right.
Which might have been the last time the Cubs got a clutch hit.
Right.
In that seat. But,
right, right.
But I root for stories, and I look at that kind of narrative. You have to balance that, and metrics bring you back to that. Do you fall into that? Do you protect yourself from falling into that? Because I think it's really romantic.
Narratives in baseball in particular, it's everything. And I think the more I've done this, the less I blend in terms of the sabermetric stuff. I think there was a period of time, maybe early after Theo took over, when the Cubs weren't very good, we had a lot of time to talk about this stuff.
Yes, you did.
But it was a little bit more of
like from opening
educating
day.
All of us, and I would say educating myself, not as much as the fans, but just on the numbers that matter. But I think now, in terms of stats and how teams go about their business, if you can blend that into a narrative, I think it goes over much better in a broadcast. And, you know, that's how Vin Scully always did it, right? He told stories. So for me, I'm always looking for a good story, no question about it. Yep.
The free agency period, which is still going on, and we'll see how it winds up. Certainly the big names still out there with Bryce and Manny Machado still out there. But we heard some of the players comment on it yesterday just about the way it's changed from how it had worked in the past, and specific to several things. One, the longer term in terms of years deals. And number two, just the premium. And I mean, we see the Yankees, it seems like they signed a relief pitcher every other day. They've got a stacked bullpen, a lot of guys they've added there. In your mind, is this just a changing of how executives are looking to put teams together and what they're willing to commit? You know, are they going to say, hey, 10-year contracts, why would we do that anymore? Is that something that's here to stay in your mind?
Well, it does go in cycles, and you tend to have this glacial movement in the game where you see subtle changes, and then all of a sudden everybody starts to kind of view it similarly. And the last two off seasons have been really weird in that a lot of great free agents have had to sit around and wait until spring training, or in some cases even into April. it used to be, as Theo said, again, in the panel we just did, you go into an offseason, you go, we need a shortstop, we need a left-handed setup guy, and we need a backup outfielder. And you went out and you signed those three guys, or you traded for them, and you were done. And it sometimes didn't matter how much money or how many years. Well, now it's just such a science that I think you can plug a lot of stuff into a computer, and it comes back, don't pay more than this amount, right? And I think they stick...
They're very different colors. Yeah. It pops up in different colors.
They stick very close to that.
It's like blood tests.
Right. And then every once in a while, you roll the dice, and you go, you know what? John Lester, we're going to give him 6 years. We hope his arm holds up, but we feel that this is the right thing at the right time for this franchise. And it's turned into, thankfully, arguably the greatest free agent signing in the history of the Cubs, mm-hmm. and one of the greatest in Chicago sports history, considering the outcome 2 years after he signed. So, Yu Darvish, Tyler Chatwood, first year, it didn't work out. Thankfully, they'll have their chance to get it back to where the Cubs thought they would be when they signed them, but it's a science that doesn't often produce the results that you want, unfortunately. But that's the beauty of sports. You never know.
Right.
You never know.
And I think I think Theo once famously was quoting Tom Cruise in Risky Business. I can't say the line here, but sometimes, Joel, you just got to say what the...
Right.
And there, some of the signings in Boston were like that. Theo went through this in Boston. Theo and Judd. 2004, break the curse, right? At long last, 5, disappointing. 6, disappointing. We're following that. We're watching him relive that. And now here you are the fourth year. They won it in 2007. Does he talk about that? Has he drawn any parallels as you heard? I've not heard him do that.
I have not. And really, after he left, didn't they go first to last to first? The Bobby Valentine year, they finished last.
Right.
So if you're a Cub fan, think about what the Red Sox fans went through, right? They had that.
Quite the roller coaster.
Last place and then came back and won the World Series. So the Cubs, if you bottom out at 95, you feel a heck of a lot better. But I'm just adding some perspective to it is all. Because, yeah, some other teams have to go way down to come back up. And you hope that that doesn't happen in this case.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers in Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now at NUSports.com. And Len, that's exactly as a lifelong born and raised Cubs fan, what I try to keep in mind as I'm gauging success and failure of a season is that the last... 4 seasons. I mean, this is the greatest stretch of Cubs baseball I've ever seen in my life, and I know most of our Cubs fans have seen in their lives. So while I'm upset they didn't go further last season, I cannot be upset necessarily with a 95-win first-place team. I mean, that just is not something that I can be that down about, especially when we've seen this same group play as well as they have in the past.
Yeah, I think that's right, Mike. And, you know, traveling with a team every day, it's almost like you have two parts of your brain, because I think the big picture, you hit it right on the head, but I think the small picture is you should have been really upset after the Cubs petered out basically at the end. They were upset. The fans should have been upset. It felt at that moment like it was a total, utter failure. But when you travel with a team, and this is hard for what Steve, you did for decades, is try to write these big picture narratives based on the last 3 hours or the last 3 days. when now we sit here in January and you look back, it's something that happened last April.
And they all haunt you.
Right. It didn't matter, right?
No, right? It didn't.
Like some awful game or some great game. And the big picture doesn't matter. And when you travel with a team, you learn that very quickly. With Zach Zaidman, who had been with the Bears for so long, that was a big adjustment for him. It's like, we got a game tomorrow.
Yes.
Not next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to spend the next week doing this.
Picking it apart.
We have a game tomorrow.
Parsing it. Yeah.
So players, and I think people who travel with a team, the day-to-day stuff really doesn't affect you like it does a fan. But it's the end of the season where the players, like Theo talked about, there were guys crying in the clubhouse. They were really ticked off. They were angry. They were shocked. I think it would have been fascinating to have a camera in there and to really see just how devastated those players were when all of a sudden their season was over. I think that whole season of trying to remain even kind of builds up to that moment, and it's either elation or total dejection.
I covered teams that have gone through something similar, and my feeling was, and looking back now, the macro view is players take that day-to-day approach. There's another game.
Yeah.
And they're kind of hiding whatever doubt they have because there's another game.
Right.
But when there's not another game, it all comes out. They've been building up. They've been sitting on it. They would not let it show because there was another game, another chance. And that's what happens at the end. I used to say a hockey season was never official until I saw a Sutter cry in the playoffs.
Right.
It wasn't officially over, and then one of them was always crying. But they would be the stiffest of lips because that's the way that family was in that sport. And I think the Cubs went through that.
Yeah, I think they did.
Let me ask you something, since I'm unfamiliar with all of the oeuvre that is Tommy Haatavi. What can you share with us?
We're really smart, really connects well with the players, has a very close relationship with Joe. Every day when Ron Coomer and I and if JD wants to pop in or Pat, we meet with Joe. Invariably, Tommy would walk in with Joe's cheat sheet. That will not be Tommy's job anymore, but it was basically how to set up hitters on the other team, what changes to make in terms of pinch hit here or there. So he was really strategically very important. I think a lot of that will continue. Very confident guy. I love the idea of promoting from within. Usually when changes like this are made with a position that's really important, like pitching coach, you go out and you get somebody who has experience from some other place. But I think there were other teams who wanted Tommy as their pitching coach, and I think it's just a great sign that they were able to promote from within. I think it's a really good thing organizationally.
And we've heard, Joe, as we enter spring training a few weeks from now, I imagine you'll be heading down to Arizona and the Cubs will be down there. Joe's contract is up after the season. He says, not even a thing, don't worry about it. He's confident in everything. Is your biggest storyline heading into Arizona, is it health for this team?
The biggest storyline, yeah, probably. I think we want to see how Chris Bryant reacts with the shoulder.
That's the off-season signing.
There's
your big
Chris Bryant.
There's
and,
your
and
off-season signing.
And Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood, if they come in and produce as expected last year, then that is. I mean, it's the old cliche, right, that, the injured guy comes back and, well, hey, there's your free agent.
Trade.
Okay.
Yeah, health probably is the big question because right now, as we sit here again a month before the games start, there aren't a lot of decisions to be made. We kind of know the rotation. Mm-hmm. We basically know the starting lineup. We basically know what the bullpen's going to look like. There'll be some tweaks here or there, but it's pretty set.
Before we dismiss the starting lineup, before we let you go, do we have enough information post Dexter Fowler about the value of a leadoff guy for Joe's team? I'm not looking to I'm not looking to put blood in anyone's urine. I'm just simply bringing it up because it had been a point of contention, and I don't know if we have enough time or distance or if there are metrics that tell us that this is a terrible spot for the Cubs. They're better off with one guy. That one guy happened to be terrific. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you where I sit. Just look at the overall number at the end of the year, and I don't think it really matters how many guys do it. If you have a leadoff on-base percentage of .360, it's good. Whether that's a combination of Rizzo, Happ, Zobrist, Descalzo, Schwarber, Baez.
Best leadoff hitter in history, right. Anthony Rizzo. There he is.
That's the way I look at it, Steve. I don't know that I'm right.
No, but I
do think when you look at when the Cubs won the World Series, they had one guy who did it all year.
Right.
He was really good at it.
I
can't answer that.
That's a championship bias. But you want to follow championship teams. That's why I bring that up. Happ was .353. By the way, talk about the narrative. He hits the first pitch of last season for a home run. I mean, that starts my narrative. I go, oh, no.
Was Happ's on base as a leadoff hitter .353?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll take that, right?
Well, was it? I wrote it down. .353 is on base percentage, and I have to go back and clarify whether it was on leadoff or overall. But still,
it's good.
You're getting that kind of production from
him.
Joe's always believed in him. Joe's liked that combination, power,
it's very athletic
bat, yes, speed, and whatever he could do, and he believes in him. And I thought Kyle Schwarber was a much better player, much better at taking walks after he came back from the minors.
I'll tell you what. Here's a good one for you. I think it was after the World Series. Yeah, so it was the Cubs convention 2 years ago. This puts it in perspective. I was talking to Ian yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Cubs' first-round pick in 2015. So he said, so basically, I'm kind of the – and fans were really into the big picks and the big prospects. The Cubs called him and said, we don't need you at the convention. We just won the World Series. So this is 2 years ago. So he was on the radar.
He's got a bigger name on the other line.
He was on the radar in terms of, you know, fans knew the name.
Right.
But he was not a big leaguer 2 years ago, and they were like, we don't need you here. We've got enough. And he was like, okay, fine. But, like, he showed up that year in 2017. He's just getting started.
I understand.
He's
and
a baby.
Joe's believed
he
in
really
him.
Is.
Joe's believed in him a lot.
And Theo, I know, a season ago, Bruce and I had Theo on Inside the Clubhouse, and we asked him, give us a breakout candidate for the year. And he mentioned Ian Happ. That was the first guy that he said. And then he did. He hit the first pitch out for a home run. And it's like, hey, the guy knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
All right, Len, we really appreciate you.
My pleasure.
Bye. This was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed it.
So thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Rosie.
Len Casper.
Thank you, Len.
Mike. Cubs broadcaster. We'll take a break. We come back top of the hour. Jason Hayward will be here. He'll be thrilled to know my daughter loves him. Rosenblum and Esposito, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. All right, so Allie, my baby doll, was thanking me for the shout-out that she loves Jay Hay.
Via Twitter?
No, via text.
Got it.
And then wanted me to ask Len who his fave seventh-inning singer was. So I'm sorry, I don't look at my phone when we do interviews. I look at my guest.
Correct.
And he's great. I love talking with Len. I just love, he straddles that. And that's why I asked him about the narratives and metrics, because metrics are just cold, unemotional
numbers.
And the narratives, there's humans, there's romance, there's stories. And he does a great job of mixing those. He was very, very progressive and aggressive in incorporating them into Cubs broadcasts, he and JD. And now there's different kinds of stories to tell. And that's a tough thing to... Len does a really good job of juggling that, of mixing them in, and he talked about that.
And think about this, too, and I certainly don't want Len to be embarrassed that I'm putting him and Vin Scully in the same sentence, but as young as Len came to the Cubs...
He still looks young today.
He does, and he is. I mean, but he has a chance to be one of those decades-long, assuming he wants to keep doing it. I would assume the Cubs want to keep him there. He does a fantastic job. He could be here for 35, 40 years doing Cubs games. And it's been...
And always look like America's teenager.
Correct. He's been here, what, 15 years already? Exactly. He looks like
I don't know
he
how
just
many
stepped years. In.
Been a lot.
It's been a lot.
I want to make sure you note this. Tomorrow on The Score, there's football. Sorry, Bears fans.
It is football. It's bear weather outside, actually.
It
yes.
is. This really is. Tomorrow is going to be single digits. The number of Bears fans who are happy will be single digits, too, I'm sure.
That's right.
But we have the AFC and NFC Championship games on The Score for you starting at 1. Rams at Saints. Be the first game, 1 o'clock on The Score, followed by Pats and Chiefs. The Rams fans are petitioning to get the referee assigned to the game, unassigned to the game. Bill Vinovich, apparently, they blame... Ram fans blame him for losing every game he referees or his crew referees.
So what is their record in Vinovichian games, I guess, would be the...
They've gone 0-8 since 2012. And now they're going as if going into into New Orleans in the Dome isn't tough enough. But I don't know if you saw this on... People are always messing around with Wikipedia, you see changes in there, right? So the New England Patriots tweeted out a screenshot of Wikipedia, and their comment on top was, we didn't do this, we swear. And so it's the AFC Championship game, and the Wikipedia screenshot says, the AFC Championship game
is the annual championship game of the American Football Conference where one team gets to play the New England Patriots.
That is well done, and subtly enough so that most people are like, well, yeah, just kind of breeze through it.
If I am the New England Patriots,
is this eight straight?
I'm taking credit for that.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. Is this eight straight?
Sure it is.
And I also saw a stat this week, which
blew me away. And they go into Kansas City. Have you ever heard a game, and you hear a game in Arrowhead Stadium? Have you ever heard a game there?
Loud.
Yes. It's shaking.
Yep.
It's you could measure it the way you'd measure an earthquake. It is so, so tremulous.
I like Kansas City in the game. I'm wary to pick against Tom Terrific. And I did see the stat, which I'll throw out before we head to break. Tom Brady has played in more Super Bowls than he has road playoff games. Did you see this one this week?
I did not. I know he's 3-4. He's played in 7 road AFC championship games.
Then he has played road playoff games. So some of those are at home. Some of those have been road games, those AFC title games.
No. I thought he was... Okay, so he's 3-7. He's played in road playoff. 3-7
He's played in
playoff.
More Super Bowls than he's had road playoff games. That was the stat I saw.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
That's your Cy Young Award winner.
How about
winner.
That?
All right, we'll take a break. Rosenblum and Esposito from the Cubs convention. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.